How's it going, girl?
Oh, you know, it's going.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Same shit, different day.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I think first off the bat, we should mention
that there's a voice missing.
Yeah. We are Katie Bethless this mm-hmm. episode. That might change mid-episode, but we'll see. She got called away for work business stuff.
Apparently, she's got better things to do. like make money.
So she's left us on our own. I don't know how wise of a decision that is.
I don't know.
But
you're having coffee, not having a Mountain Dew. This is a great...
It's going to go downhill very fast.
Mm-hmm.
But this also might be a very short episode, because I'm going to be honest. I'm in the middle of final paper right now for my last class of my master's degree. And I tried to work on notes. I got a decent amount done, but it's very loosely put together at this point. And because I really enjoy that topic, I want to do them justice, we're going to do a different topic. And we'll come back to them later.
You're speaking in very broad strokes.
I know. And it's very open-ended at this point. But should I just say what I was working on? And then...
Please?
Okay, so I was working on... It's going to sound very boring when I say it. Librarian history. But specifically the...
The snooze fest.
Listen to this, though. The Pack Horse Library Project of East Kentucky.
What the fuck is that?
Well, it's a project that came up in the Great Depression in the Appalachian Mountain area. And there's some badass librarians we should talk about. But
did they fight Nazis?
God, I wish. They're a little too early to fight Nazis, but they're pretty... There's something else.
Did they just beat kids with rulers?
Sure. No, they didn't do that. They were very nice ladies, but very strong ladies. So we'll talk about them
eventually. So no arson?
Probably not. Can't confirm yet. Haven't finished research.
Of course you haven't, Ashley.
So today we're going to talk about something else.
And what's that?
Well, welcome to Legendary Lasses.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Ashley.
And I'm Sally.
And we're missing Katie Beth.
We're missing Katie Beth.
I got really sad after I didn't hear her name for a second.
Yeah.
That was weird. Okay, well, today we're going to talk about a fictional legendary lass.
Okay.
In hopes that we can talk about a more broader topic.
Okay.
So, our starting material is Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte.
Okay.
Now, how much do you know about Jane Eyre?
I know nothing.
This is going to be a great episode.
And I feel bad, but like...
To be fair, I did not give anybody any warning.
Yeah.
Because I switched topics on my drive home from school.
Well, also, like, I should know about this.
Yeah, but I'm not going to give you shit about that.
Because you haven't seen Tu Wong Fu.
That's true. Also,
or Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
That is also true. But also, you have such a lovely adventure ahead of you if you ever choose to pick up this book. So I'm not going to give you shit about it because I envy you being able to read this for the first time.
Okay.
I wish I could read it for the first time again.
But all of our listeners are going to be like, she's an idiot. This explains a lot.
I think there's a lot of people that have not picked up classical literature.
Mm-hmm.
Or Victorian literature in general, because they're afraid that it's going to be too over their head.
Is it a lot like when people have a fear, like, or they don't want to read Shakespeare for the same reason?
Yes, I think so. And I can understand that fear. But once you get into it, you'll realize that it's much more familiar than you think it's going to be.
They should have a thing where it's like, you know how Sparknotes has no fear Shakespeare? They should have no fear Jane Air. Well, I'm just trying to have it rhyme, Ashley.
Oh, okay. I mean, they do have spark notes on this.
Yeah. Or Shmoo probably does a thing.
Probably.
And I know there's a million bajillion movies.
The problem with doing, like, a No Fear Shakespeare thing is that, like, it is written in plain English.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's not gonna have, like, Elizabethan translations like No Fear Shakespeare would, because it is English. It's our English that we still use today.
The Queen's English.
The Queen's English. But anyway, I'm also drinking a lovely coffee that is Jane Eyre inspired that came from my subscription box coffee in a classic.
I'm
And honestly, I'm just really enjoying life, which is surprising because I was not enjoying life about 20 minutes ago.
I'm having a Baja Blast from Taco Bell. Because I...
Honestly, we're both living our best lives.
I mean, I'm living life.
Yeah. So, specifically about Jane Eyre, I want to talk about a character called Bertha Mason.
Oh, Bertha.
Okay. Well, okay then.
We're talking about Bertha.
Okay. Yeah?
I'm sorry, anyone named Bertha.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to cut this part out?
No, I'm going to leave that in. Because that was a great immediate reaction. But anyway. Those of you who have read Jane Eyre will know the person I'm talking about. For people who haven't, I'm sorry I'm about to ruin Jane Eyre for you, but I hope you read it anyway. So, Sally, since you haven't read Jane Eyre, and I'm sure some of our listeners haven't either, I'm going to go ahead and give kind of a brief synopsis to get us to where we need to talk about.
Okay, and I will interrupt all throughout.
Great. I love commentary. We have a podcast. So, Jane Eyre is a story of Jane Eyre.
Oh, wow!
Who is, starts out at a very abusive school, where she loses her only childhood friend, but manages to make it, becomes a teacher at this school, and eventually starts sending off letters of applications to be a governess so that she can, one, get out of that school,
mm-hmm.
and two, have better pay.
Okay.
Because you're a governess.
Okay.
Any questions so far?
Question. You said she's going to become a governess. Does this lead to the beginning of The Sound of Music?
No. But I get where you're going.
You lost me.
She's not a nun, so it can't be The Sound of Music.
Well, Julie Andrews wasn't a nun either. She was just kind of like, she wasn't a full, like, she didn't.
She was a novice.
Mm-hmm.
Jane is not a novice, nor is she in the process of becoming part of the church. She's just a school teacher.
Well, this is fiction, and Sound of Music was based on real life.
Okay. So.
It was based on a true story.
I know. We talked about it in our nonsense episode.
Nonsense. All right. Well, let's get back in the habit.
Oh, God. That only works if we're talking about nuns, and we're not.
We were. Okay. Anyways, back to Jane Eyre.
So, she finally gets a letter asking her to come to the house to be a governess.
Okay. And this is the beginning of The Sound of Music.
Not quite. Maybe we'll get there, though. Hang tight. I forget what the house is called, and maybe I should have looked that up before we started
just the Von Trapp house.
You know, that's probably what it is. Let's call it that. The Von Trapp estate.
Yeah!
So, this estate
I cracked my neck.
Is in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a huge house. Someone very, very wealthy.
Obviously, it's an estate, and they're hiring for a governess.
Yeah. So she gets there. The master of the house is not home yet.
Is it Thénardier? Is this where, like, Miss comes in?
Maybe.
Sorry, you said master of the house.
I know.
And, you know.
Oh, such a good song. It popped into my head, too. But anyway. She's greeted by kind of the lady who runs the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the child who she will be tutoring. I think her name is Adele.
Like, hello? Like that Adele?
Kind of like that Adele. Would you mind holding my coffee while I just double check really quick? Adele. It is Adele. I was right.
Is it spelled the same way as it?
A-D-E with a accent mark, L-E. Adele is a very lively young lady. She's, like, maybe 10.
Okay.
She speaks French.
Ooh la la.
I know. You know, speaks English, too. She gets to know Adele a little bit, and then she starts, you know, tutoring her in the next following days. But then Jane's like, oh, I need to leave the house, and I think she's, like, delivering a letter or something. So I gotta walk to town. So she's walking across the moors, basically, of England, and it's all foggy and misty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
it sounds like that would never happen, it being foggy in England.
I know. And then she comes up, Well, she doesn't come upon... A man on a horse comes upon her in the middle of the path.
Okay.
And it spooks the horse. And the horse does its horse thing, and the man on the horse goes flying off.
That's not nice. Of the horse.
And he hurts himself. But
he's is he just horsing around?
Yep. He was horsing around.
I just saw a part of you die.
Yep. A little piece of my soul just left my body a little bit. So Jane picks up this man and is like, oh, I'm so sorry. Are you all right? And he goes, you've bewitched my horse, ma'am. He doesn't say ma'am. I think he says miss or something. And she's like, no, I didn't bewitch your horse. And she's like, where are you going? Let me help you get there. It's the least I can do. He goes, well, I'm going that way. She goes, great, I will accompany you, and we'll get your horse back and everything. Well, they only go back to the estate where she's being a governess at. Mm-hmm. And this man is welcomed by the lady who welcomed Jane earlier in the week.
Oh.
And it turns out this man is the master of the house who hired her to
tutor. Master of the house.
Who hired her to tutor his daughter, Adele.
This sounds like the beginning of a sitcom.
It's a dark sitcom.
Yeah, so it's not like The Nanny?
No.
What if they did a version of Jane Eyre and it had Fran Drescher?
I would kill myself. I would kill myself.
You didn't like The Nanny?
No way.
I loved The Nanny.
I don't mind the show.
You just don't like the...
This cannot happen. This adaptation of yours. No.
Okay.
No.
I won't do it.
So anyway, long story short, because this is a very long novel,
mm-hmm.
a blossoming romance occurs between Jane and Mr. Rochester, who is the master of the house. And eventually, I forgot the best parts. Sometimes at night, Jane will hear giggling in the hallways.
Ghosts.
And, like, she thinks it's Adele being up late or something.
It's ghosts. I'm telling you right now, I don't know shit about this story. It's fucking ghosts.
And then sometimes when she goes outside, she'll see linen flying from the windows of a part of the house that's supposedly not occupied.
Again, ghosts. Ghosts gotta do their laundry, too.
Yeah, ghosts gotta do their laundry, too.
Especially in that day, like, they had a bunch of layers. Come on.
I know, that is true. That's so much clothing to wash.
That's a lot of fabric.
Eventually, though, one night, she hears footsteps outside of her door. Mm-hmm. And she's like, that's no good. I don't like that. So she only goes and investigates, doesn't she? Like a stupid. So she's only got... Again, this is Victorian.
So this wasn't like Scooby-Doo, where it's like... Okay, guys, split up.
No. This is Jane Eyre by herself in a house.
She's fucking stupid. Come on. She didn't watch Scooby-Doo. There's power in numbers.
This is Victorian. She didn't know Scooby-Doo.
There's power in the buddy system.
There is power in the buddy system.
She should have just watched Scooby-Doo. She probably wouldn't have gotten these stupid fucking shenanigans.
I mean, okay, so we're talking gothic here. It's Victorian gothic.
Okay, gothic Scooby-Doo. They probably have it somewhere.
But it's the whole trope of being in a house you don't really know.
Yeah.
But it's the Bronte version of that. So.
Of course.
She goes investigating by herself in this dark house with a candle, and it leads her to Mr. Rochester's door. And she's like, Mr. Rochester, are you okay? No response, but she can, like, smell something, like, it's not right. So she opens the door. Mr. Rochester is there, uh-huh. on his bed, asleep, or passed out. Don't know.
Or both.
Both. His bed is on fire.
Like, is he in the middle of the bed and the bed just, like, engulfed in flames? Or is it just, like, little...
It depends on what version of the movie you watch. But in the book, it is described as, like, his bed sheets have caught a light.
Uh-huh.
And it's spreading to, like, the canopy and, like, engulfing him.
I think of Great Expectations.
Okay.
With, like, I forgot what... It's the lady that, like, that's always in her wedding dress.
Is that Great Expectations?
Yeah, and her dress.
Oh, Miss Havisham?
Yeah, Miss Havisham. I was the last since I've read that book.
Yeah.
But yeah. I read that book 10 years ago. God, I'm old.
You should read it again. Have a reunion. Sometimes you have to have a reunion with a book, I feel like.
When I read that, I was in 8th grade, and my English teacher, she was terrible.
I don't particularly want to teach, but I want people to have better experiences in encountering literature.
Mm-hmm. Like, we read some cool stuff. Like, we read The Hobbit, read Great Expectations. We read...
I'm surprised you didn't read any Bronte.
Flowers for Algernon.
I still need to read that.
You do.
I just feel like I haven't been in the right headspace for it.
Yeah.
I've heard it's very sad.
It is very sad. It's very good.
Well, when I read it and I get to the sad part, I'll call you. I'm just weeping. And you're going
to
be like,
dogs to cuddle too.
Flowers of Algernon. And I'm going to be like, yeah.
Flowers for Algernon, or did you watch the Mr. Rogers documentary?
Mm-hmm.
Or the movie. I'm so ready for that movie to come out.
Yeah. Anyway, Mr. Rochester's bed is in flames.
Mm-hmm.
She pulls Mr. Rochester off the bed, is like, what is happening? Like, what happened? And he goes, oh my god, you saved my life. Thank you so much.
Why are you being so blasé about it?
It was probably my fault. I always keep the candle too close to the bed or something like that.
Would you say that his bed was lit?
How does that work?
I don't know. I'm just trying. I don't know.
Let's break down that pun, Sally. How does that work?
I don't know how lit works, okay?
Okay. All right. So.
This moment is not lit.
This moment is not lit. So, anyway, eventually he professes his love for Jane. There's also a little bit of this story that takes place outside of this house on the countryside after Jane has, like, run away.
Did she just run away? She's like, I need time to figure out myself.
Yeah, kind of, but we'll get there. It's not really important to what we want to talk about today, so I'm just trying to get us to where we need to talk about.
Okay.
So this, like, whole episode happens at, like, a reverend's house where it's him and his two sisters taking care of Jane.
The fuck?
You'd understand if you read it, but it's not important, so I'm going to skip over it. Eventually, they decide to get married. It's their wedding day, or it's the night before their wedding day. Excuse me, let me go back a little bit. Jane has her wedding dress hanging in her wardrobe.
Okay.
She goes to sleep and is snoozing.
For those that are wondering the visuals of this, Ashley is miming sleeping. Putting her, like, folding her hands and putting her head, laying her head gently on it.
She's snoozing. And then suddenly, in the middle of the night, she hears footsteps outside of her door. And she goes,
it's the ghost again.
And her door opens.
It's the ghost.
And she, I forget what she does exactly, but anyway, her wardrobe opens and she sees a figure wearing her wedding dress, like Jane's wedding dress.
Yeah.
With the veil.
Yeah.
And is like, what the fuck? And so she, like, tries to, like, go and encounter this figure, right? But it, like, spooks her in some way other than, like, just being there. If it was just there, if it was me, I'd be like, now I'm out. Peace. I'm sleeping. Bye. You don't see me here. You know?
That's when you cover yourself up with a blanket because
they can't get you.
Exactly. That's why
it's a protective layer. That's why you always gotta keep your feet burritoed. And
yeah, you gotta do the whole, like, foldy thing.
Yes, kick it up
and then let physics happen. Yeah.
This is why I get so mad watching, like, The Conjuring, because all these kids sleep with their feet out. And it's like, who's sleeping with their feet out?
I know, like, someone's like, yeah, I'll sleep with my feet out. And I was like, how are you alive?
That's how you get murdered.
Yeah. Like,
that's how you get murdered by a ghost.
I understand, like, it gets warm. So, you know what? I stick my knee out. But you know what?
Not my feet. You know why? Those are good grabbing. Grabbing.
Yeah, good grabbins. Good grabbins.
So anyway, this figure spooks her and Jane faints. But she wakes up in her bed and it's like, everything's fine. Like, it must have just been a dream. So her psychoanalytical analysis of, oh, I'm scared to get married dream.
Oh, cold feet.
Cold feet, you know. So it's their wedding day.
Which is, again, why you should have your feet covered at night.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's their wedding day.
Okay.
They're in the chapel. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of witnesses. These two people don't have friends.
Yeah.
They're very
Hermity?
Sure. That's probably good. Reclusive?
Yeah.
They're getting married. They're in the middle of the service. It gets to the point of, if there's anybody who knows why these two should not be joined in matrimony.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. It's silent. And he's like, okay, go on with the...
Did someone fart?
No. No. I mean, maybe. Not in the book, though.
They probably just left it out.
Maybe.
She's like, gotta leave all the farts out of this.
Probably won't do in this book. Next book will have the farts. Mr. Rochester's like, please go on with the ceremony. And as the priest takes a breath to continue the ceremony, the chapel doors fly open! And there's a man standing there.
Is it like in Shrek when he goes, I object?
Yes, actually. It is exactly like that. Because this man who interrupts the ceremony has proof and documentation that Mr. Rochester is already married.
He's got receipts.
His wife is not dead. They are not divorced. And he's about to get wed a second time, which would make Mr. Rochester a felon at mm-hmm. this point. And it's the brother of his first wife. So Jane's all like, yo, bro, what the fuck's happening? What do you mean you're already married? And I knew I shouldn't have listened to you. You're a liar and a cheat. Scoundrel and a rogue. But anyway, he's like, oh, you want to know what this is about? Fine, let me show you what this is about. And like drags Jane from the chapel to the house, up the stairs into the attic.
Okay.
At the attic, they see a maid outside of a door who's, like, doing seamstress things.
Maid stuff.
And he's like, we have to go in now. And she's like, all of these people? Really? And he's like, yes, it has to happen. And Jane's still in her wedding gown. What the fuck? So they open the door. The maid goes in first, then Mr. Rochester, then, like, a couple other people who were there at the wedding. I think there was a doctor in attendance as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like... good. It's yeah. good that he was there. The brother and then Jane.
Okay. I love how she's the last one. She's like, after you.
In this room is a woman who is a foreigner.
Okay.
And this is Mr. Rochester's first wife, Bertha Mason.
Okay.
Now, Bertha is a little psychotic, is a word I would use.
Okay.
But she has been locked in an attic.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I would go a little bonkers, too, if I was locked in an attic.
Yeah. Now, this scene between all these people and Bertha goes a little bit differently depending on what adaptation of the film you're watching. But in the book, it's very violent. Bertha, like, rips Jane's wedding veil off of her and puts it on her own head. She spits at Jane. She, like, tries to rush the maid. She eventually, like, grabs scissors from the maid who is doing seamstress yeah. work. Stabs Mr. Rochester, who's now bleeding. Or stabs her brother or something. She stabs somebody. And Mr. Rochester violently apprehends her.
We do that outside. Like a dog.
And like forces her into a chair and yells for the maid to get rope. He then proceeds to tie her to a chair until she calms down. And when she calms down, she can be untied. And those are the instructions given to the seamstress. They all leave and Jane faints. She swoons.
Of course she does.
The man who gets stabbed is attended to and all this. But this is ultimately what I want to talk about. Is Bertha Mason and is the idea of home care versus institutionalization in the Victorian period. So during this time in the Victorian period, their institutions are a new thing. We've had bedlam, we've had jails. That did become home for people who were different and they were not great.
Yes.
The institutions and asylums of the Victorian period were progressive in nature, I would say, but were also lacking complete understanding of what was happening. Yes. Obviously, it's the Victorian period. They don't
know what we know today.
Exactly.
And we still don't know everything.
Exactly.
Because the human brain is a very complex thing.
It's a very, very complicated thing. And I don't want to shit on the Victorians about this, but, like, there's also this idea of a stigma attached to a family if you do have to institutionalize a family member.
Yes, there's
this idea of home care and protecting reputations and that individual versus getting the care that they could need. Not that the Victorian institutions could necessarily always give that care, but it could be helpful to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about Bertha. Backstory on Bertha. She is not from England. She's from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Rochester met her while he was vacationing. And it's very complex. There's a very post-colonial, but there's a very, like, colonial aspect of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's an Englishman bringing back a foreign wife. And in the book, too, Mr. Rochester is portrayed as a victim. And I think this is what I find problematic, is that he's portrayed as a victim because no one in the family told him about Bertha's outbursts, is what they're called. Reading it today, I think people would kind of diagnose her as possibly bipolar.
Okay.
Where she has, like, really good days, but there's also really bad days, and it can get violent and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, extreme bipolar is, like, I think what we're talking about here. But the fact is that her brother showed up at the wedding, kind of accusing Mr. Rochester of ignoring his wife and not taking care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd kind of like to know what you think about that. I know you haven't read the novel, but as far as, like, my poor explanation of everything. I mean, like, do you think... Well, maybe let's step back for a second. There, it's not uncommon at this time for not only women, but also individuals who are different to be locked away in an upstairs room and kind of only given basic necessities to keep
living.
If that. I don't know if Charlotte Bronte is commenting on this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I think she is to an extent. But there's also, like, it's still a love story. So she is asking her readers at some point to forgive Mr. Rochester. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I'm particularly interested in this because, like I said, I'm working on my final paper. And my final paper is about scenes of domestic violence in the Bronte novels.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts about, like, is Mr. Rochester taking care of her by keeping her there? Kind of letting her have free roam at night, it sounds like, because she's the one doing all of this. She set his bed on fire. She tried on Jane's dress.
I think reading it today, today's time, I'd be like, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
But thinking about what was going on at that time, it's... I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it reminds me of in grade school when we talk about slavery and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of slave owners, and they were, like, you know, plantation owners in the South, they were just products of their own time.
Yeah, well, you know,
but it was just, like, if I was back in that day, I would be an abolitionist. But I was like, well, it would depend on where you were at and what you did. Like, yeah. In a really good example is, like, in 12 Years a Slave,
mm-hmm.
on one of the plantations he was at, the owner of the plantation was just like, like, go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, I'm just a product of my own, like, I'm just, this is the situation that I'm in, I'm, you know.
Yeah.
I
think we come against that argument even in, like, World War II, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much did German people know? How much did people living just miles away from a concentration camp know?
Exactly. And something like that, where it was just like, they're just a product of their own time. I mean, you can... That's not, like, that shouldn't be an excuse, but, like, you just have to, I look at it through that lens as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess, no, that is a good point. I guess I don't want to impart morals on it.
Because
I think that wouldn't do us any good because knowledge is different. And stuff like that. I guess what I'm concerned about is, like, talking about mental health and how that has been relatively... No, not even relatively. I'm going to say inherently violent towards women.
Yes.
For a very long time.
Yeah, and I would even say, I think that has been going on for a very, very long time. I think we started improving that, I would say, I think in the 60s. A little after that. I'm trying to think of who it was. We should do an episode on her, this one lady. Elizabeth Cochran Seaman. She was a reporter.
Yes.
And she was locked into that mental hospital for 10 days.
Yes.
And that was in 1864.
She started investigative journalism, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this wasn't in the 60s, but it was in 1860s.
Yes.
And
I remember that.
I don't know why. I think I said the 60s because of American Horror Story Asylum.
Yeah, they do a character like her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
God, I love Sarah Paulson.
So that was one of my favorite seasons of American Horror Story.
So good.
But it reminded me of that, and at the very end of that season, they were showing footage like she was doing investigative journalism mm-hmm. in that asylum after it was just dilapidated and just mm-hmm. and I think that part was done in like the late '60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we've had you know, more contemporary, Geraldo Rivera, for example. He also did an investigative journalist report on asylums here,
mm-hmm.
And their conditions, and they are very, very poor, or were. We don't really have asylums per se now.
No,
we do have clinics, I think they're called.
Yeah, or like,
but it's also someone, like, a rose by another name, you know.
Yeah, and I think a big one here in DFW is Terrell State Hospital.
Mm.
My mom works there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we should have interviewed her.
But she doesn't like, I remember when she first started, she was on the floor, like every couple days she had to go on the floor where they were doing ECT or like electroshock therapy.
Wait, hold on.
Electric,
sorry.
Current therapy, sorry.
Do they still do that?
Yeah.
I thought that was outlawed.
I believe it's like an elective.
Like, just to clarify and make sure we're talking about the same thing. Like an American Horror Story.
I am not.
Like, not to that extent, yes. But they still send electrical waves through the brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, now it's done with consent.
That makes it better, I guess.
Well, like, was it in 2018? Or they were reclassified as class 2 devices, like the actual device that does the therapy.
Uh-huh.
And for treatment of catatonia, major depressive disorder, and bipolar disorder.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna talk too much about that because I don't know the specifications of it.
Me neither.
But I'm pretty sure it can also cause catatonic states. But
I understand.
Wow, I didn't even know we were still doing that.
The World Health Organization advises that ECT should be used only with the informed consent of the patient or their guardian if their incapacity consent has been established. I don't agree with that.
I do not agree with that.
Same.
And, like, this gets us back to the topic because the problem with it, and, like, I think if we talk about it in terms of Bertha Mason, if Bertha Mason was a housewife of the 50s, Mr. Rochester could have taken her to an asylum or an institution of some kind and told them basically anything he wanted to have her be incarcerated, where she could have procedures done like that because she's not, quote-unquote, in control of herself. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this whole idea of, like, women being incarcerated in mental institutions against their will for not being mentally ill, but merely being, I guess this is kind of getting back to our bad behavior topic, right?
Yeah.
But not being mentally ill, but merely being disobedient or stuff like that. Now, there are women who, you know, were taken to institutions who didn't realize that they were mentally ill, maybe, but it's just this idea of, like,
she isn't acting like I want her to act. She must be ill.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like,
my wife's defective. I want to return her.
Yeah. Literally. Like, that's what it is, though. And, I mean, people could have lobotomies against their will. And that completely changed them.
That was also a thing where, talking about lobotomies, it reminded me of, I didn't mention this on last week's episode about Marsha P. Johnson. Mm-hmm. But, like, even in, like, the 50s and 60s, like, in some states, homosexuality was, like, you could be institutionalized for it. People would be castrated, and they would have forced lobotomies on people.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
Have you read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I haven't. I know I need to. Have you seen the movie? I've seen a little bit of the movie.
Okay. Yeah. even in the 50s and 60s, institutions were not a place you wanted to be.
No.
Psychology was still, you know, fairly new at this point, and it's still fairly new. They knew more than they had before, but they also had drugs that they had never had before. And the capabilities of draining a person's personality out of them is incredible. And I'm sort of amazed at the lengths humans are willing to go to make someone quote-unquote normal or take out the bad.
Yeah.
I think we're heading in a good
place. We're getting there.
And I think it is starting with this idea of let's not be afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
For people who do have issues, like, it's very important that it's verbalized, I think. I think it's very important that it becomes kind of a commonplace thing to hear about syndromes or illnesses. Some are called diseases. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But, you know, naming it.
Yes.
Naming
giving it. Giving it a name and just acknowledging that it exists. Like, that's even...
And it's not that they're just quote-unquote crazy. No, it's chemicals in the brain are imbalanced. That's what most mental health issues are.
Yeah.
For myself, I don't know if you want to talk about yourself, but for me, I struggle with depression. I struggle with anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. I haven't been diagnosed with anxiety disorder, mostly because I'm too afraid to go see anybody about it.
Same.
You know, and some other stuff. I think those are kind of the two big ones that I deal with personally, and I think it's... I think a lot more people deal with that. I don't think it's a quote-unquote special thing, you know?
No, but it's definitely significant.
Yeah. And it can impact how... I mean, it obviously impacts how you see the world.
It also impacts how you function. Because, like, depression's been hitting me hard. And, like, I have... absolutely no motivation at all. Like, I'm just I don't want to air my dirty laundry, but, like, I have no motivation whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, like, it sucks.
Dude, not I mean, I canceled our recording yesterday.
Yeah.
I canceled our recording because I've been having a bad week mental health wise, and then yesterday just kind of shut me down. I got through my 8 hours of work and then was like, I can't do anything. So, yeah, like, it absolutely affects how you function, but it can also affect how people perceive you, I think. I don't know, like, maybe, do you think it affects how people perceive you or just how you're perceiving how everyone sees
it? I think it's just how I perceive everything, because, I don't know, but I do compartmentalize a lot.
But anyway, I think they're getting back to kind of, like, putting a name on things, like... I think even talking about Bertha, for instance, like, I had to kind of give a modern view of, like, I think this is what we would call extreme bipolar, right? And that gives me some kind of a connection to it, because it's shorthand for symptoms and actions and, you know, all this stuff. And it's how we can, by naming it, it's how we connect with it.
Yeah, instead
of... Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, because I feel like back then, it was just like, oh, she's mad or she's crazy.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a blanket term for something that was just other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like if we were, like, us, like, as we are right now, if we were back in that day, we would be... I don't know if I would be called eccentric or just, like, you're nutso.
I can 100% tell you right now, me and you would be locked away. Katie Beth might be able to make it, and hopefully she'd, like, come visit us. But I think
every week for our podcast.
This is the podcast from the attic.
It would be like Hella from the Magic Tavern.
I was just gonna say,
greetings from the creepy attic.
Can we do a scripted drama where it's me and you as two insane ladies in an attic?
So it's just this.
Yeah.
Do you just want to be in an attic?
No. because I
don't... Well, what if there's, like, twinkly lights and, like, there's, like, Edison bulbs and stuff?
If it's nice...
Like, what if, like, a Pinterest makeover...
Of an attic.
Of an attic. Yeah, and there's, like, shiplap. Like, it looks all... Like, HGTV went up and, like, went freaking nuts. Like, Chip and Joanna Gaines went crazy. You talking about Chip and JoJo?
Yeah. People are going to cough in my head.
No, I'm just using buzzwords.
Okay.
Do you watch any other HGTV television shows?
No.
Okay. Every time I watch Bella and Lola, whenever I leave for the day, I turn it on to HGTV.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My girls like to watch Midsummer Murders. But anyway, this is so off topic. I think maybe we should take a break.
Let's take a break. Let's take a mental health break.
Let's take a break. I'm going to go get some more coffee, and then we're going to try to figure out how to wrap this up.
Yeah.
I'm going to apologize now for this loose and fast episode, but I hope you enjoy your ad break. How do you think the episode is going?
I think it's going a lot better than I thought it was.
Yeah?
I wasn't expecting anything, so, you know, as one of my professors in college told me, if it's better than shit, we're golden.
Are we better than shit right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because shit is what? Shit.
That's true.
And you know what that would sound like? Just...
That's true. So I guess to kind of wrap this up, I'd like to talk about the rumors that supposedly inspired Jane Eyre. And it's a real house in England. It's a place called Norton... Help me out with this one. I think it's Conyers, but it's Conyers.
I think Conyers.
Conyers. And it's actually available to tour from the public now.
Oh.
A couple bought it. And restored it, and they, like, give tours now of, like, the attic that inspired Jane Eyre. And the reason for that is because for a long time in that area, going back as far as Charlotte Bronte in the 1800s, there were rumors of a woman locked in the attic who was mad.
Not just, like, angry, like, ugh.
No, crazy.
Yeah.
Like Bertha Mason.
Yeah.
Whether or not that really did inspire Jane Eyre, I'm not sure. I have my thoughts about Charlotte Bronte, but we'll talk about them when we do a Charlotte Bronte episode.
Are we going to do a Bramwell Bronte episode?
And my dead 19th century boyfriend, yes.
Okay.
Because I love him so much.
I'm very much aware of how much you're in love with Bramwell Bronte. Your peanut butter Bronte.
Honestly, if I could go back in time, I would. Go back. I don't want to change history because I don't know what ramifications I would have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be real sad letting him die. But if he had a couple of bottles knocked out of his hand while I was there, accidentally, probably be fine. And I love him. You know what the fear would be, though, is what if you go back and he's just an asshole?
I think it's like, you like the thought of him.
But I also like his brain.
His physical brain. Could we have a young Frankenstein moment where we put his brain in?
Into a boy?
Yeah. Not a boy, but like, you know, a dude.
A good boy.
Not a dog.
Oh.
Like a guy.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I'd be willing to go that mad scientist route. We'd have to campaign to unbury him.
But he's probably just a skeleton.
I don't know.
Or do we just go, like, after he was just, like, freshly dead, we just get the brain, put in, like, I don't know, saline solution?
I don't think saline solution's gonna do it. You can't...
Well, when you go on the way back machine, it'll be, he'll be freshly dead,
yeah.
And you take the brain, and you put in, you know, brain
juice. But then why couldn't we just go back and grab him?
Because it would mess up time. The time-space continuum. Did you not watch Back to the Future?
Yeah, but I'm willing to break time for Bramwell.
That needs to be on, like, a coffee mug.
I mean, I'd wear that as a t-shirt, but that's because I'm me and I love Branwell. But anyway, so these rumors about a woman being locked away, I think are interesting, one, because it's urban legend. So we would call it folklore because it's old.
Yeah.
But it would be, like, urban legend to them now.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's scary to them because it's true. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it could happen. And I think that's maybe where we go ahead and start talking about Blanche.
Yeah, so you were in the break, Ashley was talking about how this was possibly inspired by a true story. And then I thought of the story of Blanche Monnier. Mm-hmm. And she's a French woman.
Your French pun? I'm so proud of you.
Or Monnier. A French woman who, at the time, I think she was in her late teens. She didn't have an affair, but she was seeing someone.
She was engaged to a man.
Yeah, she was engaged to a man. And her mother didn't agree with who she was betrothed to, mm-hmm. and was eventually locked in the attic mm-hmm. for like 15 years or something like that.
25.
And eventually the police got into the house or... No, she sent a note. Something, I don't know.
I've heard it both ways. And I think this kind of comes down to
mythology? No.
Mythologizing?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
Words are hard. It's been a long day.
Yes. But if either way, the police got to the house.
Yeah.
And they got into the attic and they found a woman in the attic just...
Let's describe the room. I've seen pictures.
I don't want to see the pictures because I'm afraid it's going to be nightmare fuel.
It potentially could be. I'm hesitant to post them on, like, the webpage.
And I'm okay with that.
But I can describe the room. Do you want me to?
I've heard of descriptions. Okay. And it's just, like, the bed is just a mass of just bodily fluids.
Mm-hmm.
Including feces.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere on this woman, right?
The pictures don't show it on her. Uh-huh. I think she did clean herself.
Yeah.
The room is basically a bed, what looks like probably like a chamber pot sort of thing, and like a small tub.
Okay.
That's it. And a window. But someone was locked in there for 25 years.
No, thank you.
Blanche is also very emaciated. It does look like she was not given food, or when she was given food, to sustain her.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you want to say about that.
It doesn't sit with me right.
Why?
Well, what
besides the obvious.
I mean, obviously, but like, what I read and what I know about this, which is not a lot, she didn't do anything
mm-hmm.
besides just be in love.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like, yes. I know it sounds very romantic. I was just in love. But, she didn't, there was no proof that she was mad or that she, you know, she was just.
Right. So what did she do?
She, I don't know.
She disobeyed. Right?
But she, who did she just disobey her parents?
She disobeyed her mom.
Why?
Her mom didn't like him.
Well, she can fuck off.
I agree. But that's her crime, right? Like. She wasn't listening like a young lady should, quote unquote. And I think this is particularly of interest to me because it's not a man who did this. It was an older woman. It was her mom.
Yeah.
And I think this idea of like, there seems to be an age of being a woman that you're expected to listen to everyone, including other older women, obviously, but at some point, it doesn't matter what you think because we get infantilized. Is that the correct
infantilized.
Word? Infantilized. I think back then until you were basically married, but then your husband could treat you however.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to talk about because this is a real life scenario. And doing my research for my final paper regarding Bertha, I also talk about Isabella from Wuthering Heights, but that's not important. There seems to be a question of, is Bertha actually mad?
Or is she just an independent thinking lady?
Yeah, who's kind of driven mad by gaslighting, forced isolation.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's up to modern readers to interpret. I'm not sure that's how it would have been interpreted at the time it was written.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's interesting to think about, for sure.
Yeah. Do you think, and does, I mean, maybe they were mad, but, like, what if, I think it would have to happen, or would have happened if, like, if women that were independent and stuck to their guns,
mm-hmm.
that were saw as mad or insane.
Well, yeah, I which would agree with that. Well, and I mean, also in regards to Bertha Mason, we have to also take into account she's not from England. She was not raised there. She doesn't know the culture. She doesn't know the manners or the etiquette.
I think
that's not to say she's barbaric, which I would say is how she's treated.
Yes.
In the novel and in some interpretations, she's just. It comes back to this idea of, like, it's an encounter with the other.
Yes.
And we don't know how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me the only way people have dealt with that thus far is with violence.
Yeah.
Even if it's not outright violence, I mean, it's kind of like a microaggression, right? It's not, yeah. I'm not hitting you. But I'm not being kind to you.
I might as well be hitting you.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, like, I think that's very fair to take into account for Bertha Mason. Like, she would have acted differently. She would not have acted how Mr. Rochester is used to young ladies acting. And I think that's sort of the appeal for him to begin with.
So it's like a project, like, ooh, I want to tame her.
Yeah, it's kind of like a My Fair Lady thing, I would say. But in the worst way possible. Because this is where we kind of get into a colonial aspect of it, right? Like, it's an English man who has a foreign wife, who's from the Caribbean, who has seen slavery, at the very least, is now married to an English man who takes her back to his country and expects her to know how to behave.
This is fucked.
Yeah.
I know you're aware of this.
Yeah.
But it just still makes me upset.
Good. I'm glad. I mean, I'm not glad you're upset, but, you know, and, like, maybe this is my call for, like, this is why we should read classic literature.
Yes.
Because I think this encounter with the other is something we still struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, especially in terms of mental illness, but I don't know, like, I think we're progressing.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I think it comes back to this idea of the encounter with the other being scary to us for some reason. I think, I mean, we could even talk about the witch trials, you know? Like, that was also women who weren't behaving, quote-unquote. Like, I can 100% say, if me and you were back then...
Oh, yes.
We would have been dead before it even started.
Oh, my God, yes.
One, I talked to animals. They're lovely. Of course I want to talk to them. I don't want to talk to people. But you know what? That would have branded me as a witch.
We're way too eccentric. And...
loud.
And loud. And loud.
Yeah. Also, I have a real authority problem. If someone tells me what
really,
to do...
Really, Ashley? You have an authority? That's so shocking!
Listen.
We have a problem with authority, and we like pants.
Yeah. I do like I have to have something, you know?
Yeah, no, chub rub is real.
Chub rub is real, dude. I probably would have looked real good in back-in-the-day clothes, though.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We're just gonna have to dress up and...
Well, we're gonna have to do a show about the Salem witch trials.
Actually,
or just witch trials in general.
Yeah. I think one, outside of the podcast, I want to direct The Crucible.
Yes, you would definitely be great at that.
Two, in the podcast, I think we should have a series about the witch trials.
Oh, yes, we've talked about this. We're like, yeah. We're all really
interested.
Yes, interested about the witch trials. it's just going to take a deep dive.
It's going to be a very deep dive. And I think we're waiting for me to be done with school. I think we're kind of waiting for everything to kind of settle a little bit.
Yeah, because that one's going to be a lot of research.
Yeah. And we're going to kind of have time to do that.
Yeah, that's going to be a multi-part series.
Yeah, I think, and we can talk about this off air, but it'd be kind of cool to separate it by different locations.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd like to talk about the ones in Lancaster. Is that the one I'm thinking about? Maybe not. In Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
Pendle? One of them.
We could talk about that scene in Monty Python. You're like...
She's a witch!
She's a witch!
She turned me into a newt.
I got better. She weighs the same as a duck. She's a witch!
So if she weighs the same as a duck, that means she's... Made of wood! No?
What else floats? Wood! Tiny little rocks! Or tiny pebbles!
Oh, Monty Python, man. But anyway, this is kind of a strange episode, and I do want to apologize because... final papers, man.
Life's happening, man!
But we didn't want to just miss a week without getting anything out there, and I think this is something that we'll eventually revisit in deeper dives.
Get your scuba gear, guys. We're going to do a deep dive on this.
Did you like that?
That
has to be the intro to every single deep dive episode we do in the future.
Yes!
Okay. Is there anything else you want to say about this? We were kind of everywhere, and I'm really sorry. It turned more into a general discussion, like our bad behavior episode. But next week, for sure, we'll be back with
a different episode.
Legendary lass to talk about.
Yeah.
And they're going to get much better as I'm done with school and have so much more free time.
We'll have time. We're getting better.
Yeah.
We know that we ramble.
Yeah.
We already knew that.
Sorry for a weird episode.
Yeah.
I do have a book recommendation.
Yeah.
My book recommendation is called Mad Woman in the Attic.
Oh, wow. Surprise, surprise.
Fitting, right?
Very fitting.
And the authors, if you'll bear with me just one moment, because I have to pull up my Thrift Books app. It's The Mad Woman in the Attic, The Woman Writer in Her 19th Century Literary Imagination.
Ooh.
And it is written by Sandra M. Gilbert and Susan Gubar. This is more of a scholarly book, I would say. But if you're interested in women writers like I am, especially more Victorian writers, you're going to really like this book. And of course, read some Brontes. Don't be scared to pick up classical literature. It's really good, I promise. Start with Dracula.
I still need to read Dracula.
Dracula scares me today.
What?
Like, yeah. Dude, Bram Stoker? Hell yeah. He knew what he was doing.
Well, you gave a book recommendation. I think in the same topic, I have an album recommendation.
Okay.
It's by Amy Mann, and it's her album called Mental Illness.
Fitting.
Very fitting, but it's very good. If you like folksy
it is very
kind
good.
Of stuff.
Sally sent it to me earlier this week and I listened to it.
It's
it
been
very
my
good.
Jam for a little bit and mm-hmm. it's I love it. Like I said, if you're really into like that folksy kind of stuff. It was recorded back in 2017. I think she won the Grammy for it for like Best Folk Album.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I really liked it. Obviously, yeah,
but recommending
yeah.
it.
Yeah, obviously recommending
but yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's really good. You guys should check that mm-hmm. out. Well, I don't have our outro pulled up.
Okay, you know, let's try this again. Let me try and do it.
We do not say take chances. Okay.
We do not say take chances. Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Legendary Lasses. We have our website, which is legendarylasses.wordpress.com, and that was where we'll have notes and links and all that for our episodes. We're a little behind, but you know, life's been happening.
I started working on the Sappho page today, which was episode 6.
We're gonna catch up.
I need help.
We're fine. If you want to shoot us an email for either topics or you just want to shoot the shit, you know, weigh in on the pie versus cake debate or waffles versus pancakes.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that is a new debate we have
You
going.
Can email us at legendarylasses@gmail.com. We are available on a lot of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and anywhere that there is a rating system, I believe, like, on Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review, like, rate us. Right now, you know, we're still taking our baby, like, we're still, you know, taking our first steps here.
Yeah.
And so, any feedback whatsoever is gonna help us.
Yeah.
Also,
if you do like us enough and want to help support us get better and better and better, you can donate to us.
Yeah, you can donate, and you can go to anchor.fm/legendarylasses and go click on support this podcast. You can be awesome as the beautiful Ron and Gabby Davis.
We've given them like 3 shout outs.
They deserve it.
They do deserve it.
And if you support us, if you choose to, that money goes towards better equipment and
books,
book like materials, like books, things like that.
Like, we want to do a deep dive on the witch trials. That's gonna cost us a pretty penny for research.
Yeah, like, I'm doing research for a later episode, and I spent about $40 in books, and it was just 2 books.
Yeah.
Like, they add up.
They add up.
And
I wonder if Thrift Books would sponsor us.
Mm-mm.
We should look into that.
Yeah. But, materials and stuff like that. Is there any other notes?
I think that's all of our housekeeping.
That it?
I think that's it.
Oh, well, all right. Well, you know.
Katie Beth should be back next episode.
Yeah, she should be back up next. Yeah.
She should. It's her episode. We gotta figure out what she's talking about.
Well, I guess there's only way we can go out. So, go out, make waves, change history.
There you go.
And stay legendary. Kick some ass. Take chances.
Take chances, but stay out of attics. Bye.
Bye. Waffles are better than pancakes.
Sorry, this is a weird episode.